One, two, three, four.
Song Salad
with Shannon and Scott.
Welcome to Song Salad with Shannon and Scott.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Scott.
And together we're
on two different microphones.
It's so great.
Two turntables and a microphone. I mean, two microphones and no turntable.
Do I sound different?
You sound
hello
like Dr. Laura.
Yeah, I'm gonna Delilah it up in here.
Delilah,
love someone tonight. Isn't that her thing?
I think so.
I love this. I love watching my little green bar go up and down.
Yeah, you have your own little green bar to monitor your output.
Yes, my output.
You have your own waveforms of your voice.
Look at that,
tracking along.
Oh, guys, we're so official now, and it's all thanks to you.
Yes, and the Utahns.
Yes, thank you all of you who bought a Utahn helped make this mic possible, and hopefully we sound a little more pleasant in your ear holes.
Yes, and this microphone will stay with Shannon in New York when I go to California in about a month and a half.
Yeah.
And we will be doing more episodes across the continental United States.
Yes. So yeah, I won't sound like I'm in a tin can and yelling through a hole.
And it won't take us an hour to figure out how to get the microphone to work on the other end.
Correct.
Yeah.
So much appreciated, loyal listeners. You guys are awesome, awesome, awesome.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. What's a song salad?
A song salad is a short song that we write about a random topic from Wikipedia in a random music style from moodfuse.com.
Cool. Yes, it is. So, Shannon.
Yes.
Do we have a salad spinner for today?
We do have a salad spinner.
Who's it from?
It is from Jasmine Friedrich at JRFBZ, Jafferbs.
Who we wrote a sea shanty for last episode.
Yes, we did. And we actually have another Utahn for Jasmine this episode. I know. Jasmine really came through.
She did.
And Jasmine has a salad spinner suggestion as well, which is Todd, at Todd the Linguist, losing his mind on a bus every time you get a topic involving foreign words.
So basically whenever I try to start reading a Wikipedia article that's written in another language.
Yes.
So our friend Todd, who is a linguist,
yes,
losing his mind on a bus every time we get a topic involving foreign words.
We're going to spin the salad spinner. Oh, come on. It's clearly an Afro-Eurasian language. Get it right.
Okay. Afro-Eurasian.
Sorry, Todd. I don't know.
Do you...
Todd's not mean. I don't know why I was like such a jerk. Afro-Eurasian language. Oh,
cool.
Britpop. It happened finally. We got Britpop.
You were waiting for it?
Well, I just figured at some point we would do something that sounded like the Beatles.
Britpop. Britpop is a UK-based alternative rock subgenre and culture movement in the mid-1990s?
What?
Wait. This is not what I thought Britpop was. So the Britpop is not Beatles, apparently.
No. It's also, according to Wikipedia, not to be confused with Britpop.
Right.
I don't know what Britpop is.
So Britpop is a UK-based alternative rock subgenre and culture movement in the mid-1990s, which emphasized Britishness and produced bright, catchy pop music, partly in reaction to the US-led grunge music and UK shoegazing music scene.
Okay.
Listen back to our shoegazing episode if you haven't heard what that is.
Yeah.
The most successful bands associated with the movement are Oasis, Blur, Suede, and Pulp.
So I know what Oasis is.
And I know Blur, too.
All the band names are just nouns. I guess Blur can also be a verb. Todd. And technically, Pulp can also be a verb. I'm going to stop talking now.
So Oasis wrote Wonderwall.
Oh, of course.
Which makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense.
They also wrote Champagne Supernova. But
though I wouldn't call Wonderwall like upbeat and bright.
Bright, catchy.
I mean, it's catchy. It's catchy, but it's also like not like a, it doesn't feel super positive or bright. Oh, The Verve, which wrote Bittersweet Symphony.
Yep.
Don't know any of the other ones that they're mentioning.
Supergrass, Cast, Placebo, Space, Sleeper, and Elastica.
Though Britpop is viewed as a marketing tool, more of a cultural moment than a musical style or genre, there are musical conventions and influences in the bands grouped under Britpop have a term in common, such as showing elements from the Britpop music of the 60s. Okay, so I guess that would have been the Beatles. Glam rock and punk rock of the 70s and indie pop of the 80s in their music, attitude, and clothing. An influence they shared in particular was the Smiths, whose lead singer Morrissey, who is very famous, championed a nostalgic view of Britain. Britpop was a media-driven focus on bands which emerged from the independent music scene of the early 1990s.
And it says that the time span of Britpop is generally considered to be 1993 to 1997, with 1994 to 1995 being the epicenter of the activity.
Hmm.
So Spice Girls was not Britpop.
No,
Spice
I guess
Girls,
not.
Was the end of
Britpop. It says the popularity of the pop group The Spice Girls, quote unquote, snatched the spirit of the age from those responsible for Britpop.
Local identity and regional British accents are common to Britpop groups.
Cool.
Which maybe we could do that.
Great.
As well as references to British places and culture in lyrics and image.
Hmm.
Stylistically, Britpop bands use catchy hooks and lyrics that were relevant to young British people of their own generation. Britpop bands conversely denounced grunge as irrelevant and having nothing to say about their lives. Damon Albarn of Blur summed up the attitude in 1993 when, after being asked if Blur were an anti-grunge band, he said, "Well, that's good. If punk was about getting rid of hippies, then I'm getting rid of grunge."
Mm.
The imagery associated with Britpop was equally British and working class. A rise in unabashed maleness.
Cool.
Exemplified by Loaded magazine and lad culture in general, would be very much a part of the Britpop era. The Union Jack became a prominent symbol of the movement, as it had a generation earlier with mod bands such as The Who, and its use as a symbol of pride and nationalism contrasted deeply with the controversy that erupted just a few years before when former Smiths singer Morrissey performed draped in it. The emphasis on British reference points made it difficult for the genre to achieve success in the U.S.
Is it bad that I didn't know that The Who were British?
Probably, yes. Probably bad.
Yeah, I really didn't know that The Who were British.
Like, I you didn't I assume just... that Tommy was well, all written
okay.
by British people?
So here's the thing. I just, like, assumed that Tommy was just, like, written about England for some reason. Rather than just assuming that The Who were, I don't know.
That's fine. That's fine.
Bad and dumb. Sorry, everybody.
So I guess we have to write a like early 90s catchy pop rock song that references British cultural imagery and uses local British identity and accents.
Yeah. So things we are completely unequipped to do.
But that's never stopped us before.
That's very
true. Here on Song Salad.
We appropriate everything. Okay.
Brit pop.
Let's get an example.
Should we do Wonderwall?
I mean,
it's
we could do Wonderwall.
It's probably the most famous example.
Sure. Do we think that that's like actually representative of the whole genre?
I mean, it's 1995. They said that was the epicenter.
Yeah. Okay.
And it says that those bands that we read were called the Big Four of
Oasis,
Blur, Oasis,
Suede,
Blur,
and Pulp.
Suede, and Pulp. So this is Oasis's biggest song. And I will say, when Megan and I were in London at the end of our honeymoon, we went to the Hyde Park Winter Wonderland, which is a big Christmas festival. And they had a Bavarian village with this giant beer hall and a band playing. And the band was killing it and playing all covers. Everyone in this beer hall was singing along. But then they played Wonderwall. There was literally not a person in that whole tent of probably 1,000 people that was not singing along to Wonderwall.
Wow.
It's like the British national anthem over
there.
It's crazy.
And I guess if it came out in 1995, if, you know, you're thinking about like young people out on the town today, that would be like smack dab in the middle of their childhood. Yeah. So it probably made a really big impression.
Exactly. Yeah. So here is Wonderwall by Oasis from 1995. Because maybe. Okay, let's get our topic.
Yes.
And I will spin the salad spinner, which sounds like our friend Todd, the linguist.
Freaking out on a bus. I like that it's also specific to he's on a bus.
Yeah, okay, okay, here we go.
Okay.
Ugh, that definitely doesn't translate to water sprinkling festival. No, I missed my stop.
Whoa.
Huh.
Whoa. Kekaret Nisut.
Well, Todd?
Kekaret Nisut is a much debated ancient Egyptian woman's title. Women with this title are known from the first intermediate period, less often from the Middle Kingdom, but again often from the second intermediate period and the New Kingdom. The title is often translated as Lady-in-Waiting or King's Ornament. The title holders are most often married women of high status.
In the 11th dynasty, some queens of
Mentuhotep
II had that title. Henry George Fisher translated the title as Ornament of the King and saw the women with this title as part of the king's harem. Harco Willems argued that the correct translation is Adorner of the King and argued that they were playing some role in the king's cult. So it's a translation of a hieroglyphic?
Yes. So it looks like the translation of the hieroglyphic looks like a bent cane. With two, like, kind of curved...
Almost like branches
coming
off.
At the bottom. And then what looks like a...
Dagger?
A dagger, I guess. Yeah, it doesn't have, like, a hilt, but it, like, it's kind of like a blade shape. And then, like, two little thingy-mabobbers on the bottom.
So, our topic of this Britpop song is going to be this Egyptian woman's title meaning either ornament of the king or adorner of the king
or lady in waiting. Kekaret Nisut.
All right. Before we find more out about Kekaret Nisut,
if there is any more,
more to find out, we're going to do our Utahn, which was purchased by
Jasmine Friedrich at JRFBZ. Yes, I was right. JRFBZ. Okay.
Great.
Jurifubs.
Yeah, Jurifubs.
Yes. She is purchasing a Utahn for another listener of our podcast, which is super cool, Josh Jellin, and who has purchased a Utahn himself.
Yes.
Actually.
You may remember Mounted That Filly.
Yes.
Was about Josh trying to climb a horse outside of P.F. Chang's.
And I'll let the Utahn speak for itself, but this is in honor of his 30th birthday, which is this week.
Yes.
So thank you, Jasmine, and happy birthday, Josh Jellin.
Happy birthday.
Oh, 30 years old, life's in control. Where did your knives go?
So obviously some kind of inside joke between Jasmine and Josh.
Are his knives really in North Carolina?
I guess so. And he doesn't have any other knives, maybe?
I guess not.
I don't know. We just do what we're told.
Yep.
Yeah.
So where are your knives?
Where are your knives, Josh Jellin?
A Utah for Josh Jellin. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Pew, 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 pew. You know what that sound means. Surprise Utah. Surprise Utah time.
Oh, no.
Pew, pew, pew.
What? Guys, I don't know what this is.
Here we go.
Oh, my God.
My name is Shannon. I'm from Pennsylvania. I work in marketing in New York.
No, I don't.
I have three cats. I only eat purple food. My favorite genre of music is rap. Yo, my name is Shannon, and I'm here to say that I like kitties in a major way. I don't know why all the food I eat is purple. Maybe I should switch to orange or month. Get it? Because those words don't have rhymes with each other.
What the hell was that?
That was a $1 Utah that Josh Jellin bought for you, Shannon.
This whole episode is like a big circle jerk of Utahns.
Happy birthday, Josh.
I guess?
Okay. I didn't know you only ate purple food.
Wait, why do I only eat purple food?
I don't know. That was one of the facts that Josh Jellin gave to me about you.
Oh. Okay. Thanks for my surprise, Utah, Josh Jellin. About the only thing that was accurate about that song was that I like kitties.
Well, and you work in marketing in New York.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
I work
it's the
in
same
branding.
Thing.
It's not the same.
Sailors are pirates.
Oh, God. All this equivocation. That was hilarious.
Glad you liked it.
And thank you for just surprise you, John.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. All right, back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Wait, clarification.
Yeah.
Did Josh write those lyrics or you wrote the lyrics?
I wrote those lyrics based on information Josh gave me about you.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's almost like he doesn't know me at all. Okay. Well, thank goodness that's over. Let's move on.
I've been sitting on that Utah.
You have?
Waiting for this birthday episode.
Was it specific to this week that it should have gone
No,
up?
I chose to make it go up this week.
Great.
Yep.
Cool.
He requested it a while ago. A long time ago.
Who needs enemies when you've got friends like these? Cool.
Cool, cool.
What are we doing? Britpop.
We're doing a Britpop song about...
Kekkeret Nitsut. Kekkeret Nitsut.
What did you find out about that?
I found some weird stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess by Googling Kekkeret Nitsut, you're bound to find some weird stuff.
Yeah.
So what's the... All right, let's go from least weird to most weird.
Oh, it's only weird.
Okay, never mind. That's out the window.
So, honestly, I feel like unless I, like, went and enrolled in, like, whatever University Indiana Jones teaches at... Like,
Yale?
Yale? Is it Yale?
Pretty sure it's Yale.
Oh, damn. Well, unless I went and enrolled at Yale in their Egyptology program... I'm not going to find out a whole lot more about Kekkeret Nitsut.
Right. It seems like a pretty niche, specific Egypt history
It's a
thing.
Footnote. It's literally a footnote in like Egyptian texts. All of the information, if I just Google it generally, all of the information is basically some kind of regurgitation of the Wikipedia article we've already read.
Right.
So we're not missing some great insight from it.
Okay.
What I did find, however, was some fan fiction.
Oh, no.
That uses the word Kekkeret Nitsut, and it is Red River manga fan fiction.
What is Red River manga?
Okay, let's start there.
I know what manga is.
Yes.
So manga is like Japanese comic book, but like books. Like
yes.
The length of books.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, it's in a kind of classic, like, You might think of it as like anime style, but though I'm sure I'm generalizing.
Right.
These are insanely popular.
Okay, the Red River series.
No, I mean manga in general.
Manga in general. Okay.
The Red River series also seems to be popular. It won some awards. The Shogakukan Manga Award for Shoujo. And Shoujo.
We're not doing the salad spinner right now. we're just talking about okay. Keep going.
Shoujo is a genre, I guess you would say, of manga. Okay. That is directed specifically at teen girls.
Okay.
So often it features a teen girl lead mm-hmm. as the character and deals with relationships and emotions, but it stresses that it is not a like debasement of the genre. Like it still is considered like very good manga.
Cool.
Basically. So Red River has a little bit of a kooky plot. So a 15-year-old Japanese girl named Yori Suzuki.
The Suzuki method.
Yeah. Yes. Of the same. Yes.
Yeah.
She gets transported to Hattusa, which is the capital of the Hittite Empire.
Oh.
So Hittites, like, what do you know about Hittites, Scott?
I know the word. That's about it.
Yeah. Like, me too.
Yeah.
So apparently, it was a contemporary society to Egypt, to ancient Egypt.
Ah.
So anyway, this girl is transported to ancient Egypt / the Hittite Empire, and her blood is needed to place a curse upon the princes of the land so that they will die and the evil sorceress queen who summoned her can ascend to power by giving her son the throne.
Is that the Red River, her blood?
I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Is the Nile called the Red River? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I could not tell you. So anyway,
I'm just trying to make sense of all this.
Yes. So anyway, so that's like the general plot. And but what's important to know is that she lands there, but she's like different looking, and right. She like knows about hygiene, and she like can recognize like iron ore and stuff. And so they're like, oh, you're a goddess. And so they think that she is an incarnation of the goddess Ishtar.
Okay.
So this fan fiction that I found, we're going down that rabbit hole. Just
yes,
like
we
it's
are.
Just slicked with oil and we're just shooting right down it. The
poor rabbit.
The fan fiction that I found is literally the same plot, except it's a 13-year-old girl
mm-hmm.
and she's transported to Egypt.
Okay.
And is regarded as an incarnation of the goddess Bastet.
Okay.
And so like it's kind of the same thing, but it's very short
uh-huh.
and like it switches perspectives a lot, and it's very confusing. Like it's sort of written by someone who like doesn't quite grasp like the like the concept of a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Like you really can't follow it at all. And there's also, so there's like Bastet is a character, but then there's also a character Basset.
Oh no.
Which was very difficult because I was like reading and I was like, wow, they're making a lot of typos. And how are these characters like the same? But it was very confusing. Anyway. So the, character Bastet, who I thought was a goddess, but like I guess not then, is referred to as Kekeret Nisut Bastet. So like it's like her title.
Oh.
In this fan fiction.
Okay.
And because I can't like get a copy of Red River manga to like look at, I don't know if that's like something that they also use. I feel like I should pick like a choice little nugget
Please
out of
do.
This fan
Please
fiction
read
to
this.
Read.
Yes.
I'm just going to read this first like paragraph, which is apparently from Ramsey's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is how the whole thing starts.
Okay.
Adopting a child like that out of nowhere. Has Bastet lost her mind? Although it is a very noble act, we can't just take in street rats from everywhere. I nodded, though. Perhaps it would ease her mind, knowing she had that child in our household, she will stop pestering me about getting married. It isn't that I don't want to get married to Bastet. Otherwise, I wouldn't have kept her around. I love the woman, but the time doesn't feel right. With her always leaving to spy and such, when would she have time to be a proper wife? I saw Eamon. That comes out of nowhere. I saw Eamon. I'd grown accustomed to him. He'd come check on us or take Bastet. So now was my time to pretend like I didn't notice if we wanted to keep up the act. She nodded sternly to him, put down the child, instead taking her hand, and walked toward the palace Nefertiti resided in.
Resided in?
I think that's what they meant, but they wrote resigned. What did that? What? I saw Eamon. I'd grown accustomed to him. He'd come check on us or take Bastet. So now was my time to pretend like I didn't notice if he wanted to keep up the act. What?
I'm just going to chalk it up to the fact that if you don't know anything about the source material, how could you possibly know anything about the fan fiction?
Fair enough. also, just pointing out, she was holding the child who is 13 years old. So who's this, like, beefy woman holding a 13-year-old girl in her arms? So that is all I found out about Kekkered Neesuit. Is this insane fan fiction that is like the bizarro Funhouse Mirror version of this award-winning
Red River
shoujo manga?
Yeah. Remember last week we were talking about how getting the Miami Tower Wikipedia article didn't allow us to go on internet rabbit hole searches?
Yeah. Well, this is what 180. Happens. Ugh, guys.
So, didn't really illuminate anything about Kekkered Neesuit other than having it used in context somewhere and, you know, holding up its definition as a, you know, object of a king.
Yes, as a title. And then later on, there is a little bit of like a little like kerfuffle because someone is like, oh, Kekkered Neesuit, isn't that a little premature? You're not married yet.
Ah, okay.
So apparently it's more like a wife or concubine term, I guess, like when you're in the king's rotation. You get this title. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's what I found. What have you been doing?
I put together my Britpop band.
Okay.
Inspired by those big four bands, Oasis, Blur, Pulse, and
was it really called Pulse?
I thought it was Pulse, wasn't it? No.
Suede and Pulp. You kind of put Suede and Pulp together.
Oasis,
and made Pulse.
Blur, Suede and Pulp. So similarities between those bands. And remember that Britpop was a movement away from grunge, away from shoegaze. Grunge and shoegaze used a lot of like distorted guitars and sort of affected vocals, like to make the vocals less clear.
And if you're interested in shoegaze, you should look at our Dream Pop episode.
Yes.
Which is another near term for shoegaze.
Right. So the band that I'm going to use is one acoustic guitar and one electric guitar, which you'll hear on songs like Wonderwall.
Okay.
The electric guitar does not have any distortion on it. I'll use electric bass, drums, tambourine. They love tambourine, these bands.
But like, that's because everybody loves tambourines.
We'll use tambourine. And then I'm going to use a cello.
A cello?
Cello. It's a bass. No, it's actually a cello.
I was going to make a joke about what's the difference between a cello and a cello.
It's just a cello.
Okay.
I'll use a cello.
Cello when it walks in the room for the first time.
You'll hear a cello. Yeah. Great. Great. Funny.
Cello.
Funny.
No, I'm going to say that whenever I see you.
I saw a good joke today at a coffee shop.
You saw a good joke?
On a chalkboard sign.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What is it?
How did the hipster burn his tongue? He sipped his coffee before it was cool.
Oh, no.
I like that one.
That is actually good.
If you listen to Wonderwall, you'll hear a cello in the background. And if you listen to songs like Bittersweet Symphony, you'll hear a whole lot of strings. Yeah. But I'm just going to use one cello.
I used to love that song. That
Bittersweet
song,
Symphony?
That song was on my sleep mix, which we have previously.
Along with Enya.
Along with Enya and along with two of Holst's planets. an eclectic sleep mix. And I used to just like feel that song so hard. It's a bittersweet symphony. That's life.
That's life.
Yeah.
The last element of my band, obviously, is the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use a British accent.
Yeah.
Because Britpop is definitively British.
You don't say.
Need to get that regional accent in there.
How would a British person say Kekra Nisut?
Kekra Nisut.
Oh, so you're like that kind of British.
It's the only British I can do. It's supposed to be working class. It's supposed to be blue collar.
Okay.
So I'll be a little Cockney. I'll be a little Billy Elliot up in here.
Yeah. Well, I would love to hear you actually do a northern British accent, which I think is a little bit different.
But I can't do like, I don't know. Especially when I'm singing. I'm just going to do
Scott
Wasserman's generic British accent. TM, TM.
TM, TM. Yeah. All in capitals.
It will be me singing the song.
Great.
Because Britpop was about, quote, unabashed maleness.
Which is hilarious to me.
I don't know.
But whatever.
So, male vocal.
Contrasting
solo,
nicely with our last week's episode.
Exactly. Mostly solo voice. Some light background vocal stuff going on here and there, but not much. So.
Okay.
So that's my plan.
Cool.
Shall we get into some lyrics?
Yeah, let's get into some lyrics.
Do it.
So I read a bunch of lyrics from Suede and Pulp and Blur and Oasis.
And Suedem.
Yes, Suedem. And they don't have a lot in common thematically, aside from lots of drug references.
Okay.
Which I guess makes sense for like the 90s kind of like post-grunge sort of thing. It was very, I don't know, like a cocaine full time, I feel like. they are non-narrative, and a lot of the lyrics are often kind of absurd and fantastical and fanciful.
Okay.
So,
Bittersweet Symphony is pretty fantastical and absurd.
Yeah. And I also found an article that was about like the 10 worst Britpop lyrics. And a lot of them were considered bad because they were just really contrived to rhyme with something, which is my biggest pet peeve.
Right.
Also, which is like you can always pick out when a lyricist is just like, ah, damn, nothing else rhymes with Prozac right now. So I'm going to rhyme it with, I think what was the example? It was like Balzac and Prozac.
Oh, I was going to ask for an example, but that's a pretty contrived one.
Yeah. So it was just like, okay. So I tried to, and it's all like very angsty too.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. So I tried to keep in mind the like male point of view, which is like a kind of, in this case, especially given the topic, like an objectification of women and like not really, just that in a certain way. I definitely like contrived a lot of the rhymes.
Good.
So it's just like, these words, they just feel good when you like put them together, but like they don't make sense. Like it really doesn't. Makes sense.
Okay.
It's not narrative. It's more meditative about Kekra Nisut. So, and I'm putting a flag in Nisut just because of how I rhymed things. Kekra Nisut.
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 Great.
Yes. Okay. So, the verse.
Yeah.
Oh, the king lies, concubines by his side. All alone, one woman cries, pallid specter of a bride. Then the chorus. Adored adornment, Kekeret Nisut, abhorrent ornament, bitter arrowroot, heart like a feather, Kekeret Nisut, your placid eyes like grapefruit.
Oh my god.
But like, that could be lyrics.
It could also be a poem from my introduction to poetry class in college.
I have
with
read
all
some of
non.
Those.
non-English majors. Oof.
I hated people like you in college.
Hey, but I took a class that was separate from people that were actually studying the thing.
See, not everybody did.
I took a specific non-majors course.
Yeah, it made me want to punch people.
I think it was called Poetry for Non-Majors.
See, that's great. Yeah. Great. Encourage all of it. But if you're clogging up my creative writing classes. Okay, anyway.
Oof.
Do you think you can turn that into a Britpop song?
Yes. I'm also trying to go over each word in my head and see if I can successfully say it in a British accent.
Oh, I gave you the worst job. Abhorrent ornament?
Abhorrent ornament. Bitter arrowroot. All right, you got a title?
Eyes Like Grapefruit, I think.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Can you sing Eyes Like Grapefruit?
Eyes Like Grapefruit. Here we go.
Oh.
By Shannon Scott.
Shining and Scott.
By Shining Scott. Governor. Two bits. By Shannon and Scott.
The king lies, concubines by his side, all alone one woman cries.
Pallid spectre of a bride,
adored adornment,
decorated me suit,
abhorrent ornament,
bitter arrowroot,
hot like a feather, decorated me suit, your placid eyes like
grapefruit. It's almost like a Renaissance motet of grapefruit.
Just grapefruit.
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 How was my accent?
Oh, horrible.
Bitter arrowroot was my favorite part to sing.
You also really hit the abhorrent.
Abhorrent. Yeah. Yep.
The stress is on the second syllable. Abhorrent.
I hit the whore pretty hard.
You
too.
You did hit that whore pretty hard. Mm. Oh goodness. Kekaretni suit. Maybe we can contact the author of this fan fiction and see if they would like to license our song to play in a MIDI version whenever you like go to the page.
Sure.
I've definitely been on like blogs like that where you like get to the blog and then it starts auto playing some like horrible MIDI music.
What is playing music on my computer right
now?
Yeah.
And if you're like me, you have 18 bazillion tabs open at any given time. Yeah.
Or we can see if the writer of that fan fiction wants to be a special guest on our podcast.
Oh my God. After we just like insulted their nonsensical fan fiction.
Yeah, right. Probably best not to.
Another
get
week
another
of
lawsuit.
Not tweeting and not, please don't sue us.
Yeah.
I mean, this
what
was,
did I say on Twitter? Subscribe, rate, review, please don't sue.
Yeah. I like that, adding subscribe, rate, review, don't sue.
Yeah.
It flows really nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does.
Song salad. Subscribe, rate, review, don't sue.
And if you'd like to subscribe, rate, and review,
you can find us on Twitter at Song Salad Cast. You can subscribe on iTunes. Just search Song Salad. If you review us, we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. And while we do not have an ongoing fundraiser, we still have one last Utahn next week. For our 1 year anniversary episode.
Wow.
Yeah, we started on January 31st last year.
Amazing.
So we'll have to try to do something special.
I'll think of something.
Do we have like a cool guest?
We may.
Stay tuned. Maybe there will be a cool guest.
I'll think of something.
Okay. Thank you to Jasmine, who bought a happy birthday Utahn for Josh Jelen. Thank you to Josh Jelen, who bought a $1 Utahn for me, apparently.
Or as you.
As me, that Scott surprised me with today. That was very good. Jasmine also had our song, or our salad spinner noise, which was about Todd at Todd the Link. There was like a lot, just a lot of like masturbatory congratulations happening today. Maybe if other people listen to us, there would be more to talk about.
This episode proves we have at least 3 listeners.
Yay! They're very loyal.
Yes.
No, we have like, we have people.
We got people.
We've got people.
Show us that you're our people and tweet at us at SongSaladCast.
We really do read your tweets and we appreciate it. And we're
we got nothing else to do.
That's not true. I have a job. Thank you for helping us get to 1 year. Well, there will be lots more gratitude next week, but
appreciate.
Deep appreciate.
Until next week.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Scott.
And together we're
Shannon and Scott.
Grapefruit.
Grapefruit. 1, 2, 3, 4. Governor?